episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm in a very weird mood right now, Adam. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I am extremely happy. And on the other hand, I'm extremely sad. And so, if I start crying randomly at some point on this episode...
Everybody will laugh at you, but anyway, there we go.
What's that?
I said everybody will spontaneously start laughing as they're listening to this.
Well, if they watched last night's Gotham, then they might be crying too, because that is why I am so in such a conflicting mood. Because on one hand, I'm not going to spoil what happened, but on one hand, one of the things that happened was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. And the other thing was one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen in my entire life. So I'm sort of in this weird mood, but mostly I'm happy. Mostly I am in a state, I just try to focus on the happy thing. And because of that happy thing, I am in some ways, when I think about that, I'm in a state of that euphoria right now, Adam. What? So let me just say this. I am really, really, really happy with a certain thing that Gotham did with the Bat-Cat relationship last night.
Right.
I'm really happy.
Okay, while you're at it, do a nice segue and do your
I was about to do that.
Obligatory.
Speaking of my OTPs, something else that makes me very happy about them is that now we are 54 days away from the Bat-Cat wedding as of this episode being recorded. I cannot wait. I am so excited. Again, like I said, I think last episode we just got under 2 months. Now we're even further under 2 months away, and I'm so happy. I'm so excited. So there's another thing. I guess overall, yes, I'm much more happy than I am in a horrified mood right now, because it's basically the two things that are making me happy regarding the Bat-Cat relationship right now are much... Well, there's two things, first of all, and they outweigh the thing that I'm a little bit scared about. But anyway, I guess that's all I'll say. I'm trying to talk in vague terms because I can't...
Yes, we'll be doing a Gotham wrap-up on the season soon enough, and then you can let it all out.
Yes, and I'll go ahead and announce our special guest for that. We're bringing in Joshua Lapton Bertone from the Gotham Chronicle to come talk about Gotham with us. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Sure. Looking forward to that. And hopefully it is a we're talking about a season finale, not a series finale.
Yes. I need more. Listen, David Mazouz and Cameron Beacondova are bringing to life Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle in live action in one of the best iterations of those two characters in live action that there's ever been. And so if I don't get more of that, I think that Fox might be expecting a lot of angry letters from me, because I will be devastated. But here's what I will say. Thank you. I really want to say that. I mean, not that anybody from Fox is listening to this probably, but thank you, Gotham, for giving me several things that you gave me in last night's episode. Thank you. That's all I can say is thank you. Seriously, if Gotham gets canceled, I will always cherish what they did with the Bat-Cat relationship, because it has been phenomenal.
And for those wondering, the Fox upfronts are, as of this recording, on Monday. So by the time you're hearing this, we will already know whether Gotham has been renewed for a fifth season?
Yes. And I will either be crying a bunch, or hopefully I will be throwing a party.
So. Right. So by then you'll know whether Gotham is coming back or not. But for now, that's where we sit as of this recording.
Yes. Yes.
But all right, what's on? We got a lot on tap.
Crossing my fingers.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, we do. We have a ton of news, and then we've got, honestly, this episode's packed. We've got two trailer reviews. We've got several news items, and then we've got a Batman Animated Series review and a movie review. So this is going to be...
But the movie is one of those Lego movies, so it's not like it's a 2.5-hour feature. It's It's basically two extended episodes of a show, basically.
Well, no, it's more like three or four.
Why? Because they're 11-minute shorts?
Well, no, because it's an hour and 15. Actually, I think this one's an hour and 18 minutes.
It's 117. So basically, if an animated series is half an hour, you got two and a half, with commercials,
it's half an hour. Without commercials, they're 22 minutes.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. So,
if it's without commercials,
generally speaking, it's 2.5 episodes.
No, it's a lot more than 2.5. Because, think about it, Adam. If this doesn't have commercials...
Most people count commercials, so what I'm saying
No, but you're not... But I'm saying this movie doesn't have commercials, so then it's equivalent to...
I get what you're saying, but when people think of animated cartoons, they include the run... Most people include shows with commercials, so I'm just saying, if you include commercials, it's 2.5.
Okay. If you include commercials, if you don't include commercials, if each one's like 22 minutes, then this would be over three. This would be like 3.5.
It'd be 3.5, okay, but...
Yeah.
It's glorified combined episodes of the cartoon, is what I'm driving at. But let's get to the news first.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the trailers first.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the news. The first trailer we kind of got was the DC Super Heroes, the Lego Aquaman
movie. Yeah, it's called Lego DC Super Heroes Aquaman Rage of Atlantis.
Yeah.
And
what?
Go on.
Here's what I'll say. I like the animation. I think it's cool that we're gonna go to Atlantis.
And what's interesting, Adam, is I think there's doing a little bit of synergy with the animated movies and the live action movies, because we got with the Lego DC Superheroes line. Earlier this year, around the time that the live-action Flash film, which actually, coincidentally, we'll talk about later on this episode, originally that was supposed to release earlier this year, around the same time that the Lego DC Super Heroes The Flash animated movie came out.
Yeah.
Now, we're getting an Aquaman one a few months before the live-action Aquaman film comes out.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we're getting a second one. There's going to be two Aquaman-related animated films coming out. Now, because there's also not really Aquaman, but Mera, so it's Aquaman related. There's going to be a Mera animated movie in the Lego DC. No, actually, I think it's not the Lego line, it's the regular DC Superhero Girls line. There's going to be a Mera movie coming later this year, too. So we're getting two.
I'm sure that's planned.
Yeah, exactly.
My only issue with like I said, I like the fact that we're going to Atlantis, I like the animation. One of my issues is that I don't like the fact that Aquaman seems to be played up as a joke, again, especially when we're trying to get to a place where he's trying to be built up into something, you know, a pivotal property for Warner Brothers. So
wait a minute. So this whole time, oh my goodness, you're going to get me off on a rant. So it's not a problem. What I was complaining about with the Lego Batman movie, when they portray Batman as a joke, but then as soon as they portray Aquaman as a joke, it's a problem?
No, it's a difference, because we've seen Batman in the Lego kind of... Besides, the Batman, to me, the minute you bring in Ace the Bat-Hound, you're going to get that ridiculousness that we got. I'm not denying that it was ridiculous.
No, you're not going to get... Look at what Batman Beyond did with Ace. Look at Tom King's story. Batman and
Aquaman and Batman are two different characters. Batman has been through the ringer in terms of, look at the ridiculousness, i.e. Batman and Robin. He survived that, right? General audiences respect Batman and find the character to be, for whatever reason, more malleable, correct?
Okay.
With Aquaman, there is this negative perception around him already of being a joke, being a loser. And it's
general audiences are not going to watch this movie.
But they're going to get it for their kids. And so, do you want to put... What I'm saying is, I don't... Just before an Aquaman movie is supposed to come out, which is going to be geared enough for all ages that you can take your kids, probably... I don't think it's prudent of them to have when you're trying to build that character up to make him as the butt of the jokes and make him like, you know,
this is ridiculous to me.
No, because
this is what
I know. No, you're not seeing the point. Batman is in a totally different spot than Aquaman is in public consciousness. There's a big difference.
This is ridiculous.
Batman is more malleable as a character, whereas Aquaman, the only thing they know him as is a joke. So when you're trying to rehabilitate him as a bigger brand for Warner Brothers in live action, to me, it doesn't make sense to have this movie portray him in this way right now.
But all the characters in this movie are portrayed that way.
Well, actually, I will say Batman was more serious in this than he was in the Flash.
I didn't realize. I've got the trailer up, so I didn't realize the sound was playing.
I didn't hear it, so you're good.
You didn't hear? Okay.
But
the worst scene in this trailer for me was the scene where... No, I'm going to fight you on that. The worst scene in this trailer for me was when Batman says Wonder Woman has gone silly or whatever, has been knocked silly.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And Superman's like, really?
Okay,
and
wait. So what's worse then? I want to ask you, what's worse? The coochie coo with Ace or that?
The thing with Ace is worse, but this is almost as bad.
But that's what I'm saying. There's even a little bit more seriousness with Batman than there is in that. But what I'm saying is the main character in these movies that I've seen personally, mm-hmm. Flash was not played as a joke in his own movie in that movie. Sure, Batman with Ace and everything else was, but Flash himself was, to me, not played as a joke. So that's the difference. The main character being the focus should not be made fun of.
I don't think Flash was taken seriously in the Lego DC Superheroes The Flash movie, Adam.
Not serious as in a lot.
I think you just got a hypersensitivity with Aquaman. You said the same thing about the Teen Titans Go.
Well, Teen Titans Go is a piece of crap joke from the word go, in my opinion. But what I'm saying is, I found the Flash, like the Flash was not portrayed the movie itself wasn't sort of laughing at him. Whereas with this, the land jokes and him being useless on land and the inference of that, to me, it's like you're making fun of your star character of this movie. So there is a difference to me, as opposed to...
I find it so hypocritical for you to say this, though, and to not have a problem when in the Lego Batman movie, he was the titular character of that movie. You said that the main character can't be played as a joke. Batman absolutely
It was never laughing at Batman. That's the difference.
Whereas when Batman was having his tuxedo dress-up party that you weren't laughing at him?
I was laughing with him. But the story itself, you're not understanding me. The story itself, to me, is not going out of their way to make fun of the character, in my opinion, in Lego Batman. In this, they are using jokes that people have said about the character and hyping them up. Whereas in the Flash, even in the Flash Lego movie, they didn't do that with the Flash. And that's the difference for me. And the other thing that I'm noticing about these Lego Batman or these Lego DC superhero movies that I'm not liking is that why does every single one of them have to be essentially a Justice League movie? That is becoming an issue for me.
They haven't all been. The first one I believe that they did was just solo Batman.
But wasn't that the one where Superman and Lex came in, or was that a different one?
I think that the first one, the very first, let me look it up. Lego Batman. I think it was called Lego Batman the Movie.
Did that not have Superman and Lex Luthor and the Joker?
It's been a while since I saw it.
If anything, it was the world's finest movie.
It's Lego Batman. Yeah, you're right. Superman and Lex were in it. Yeah. But it wasn't the Justice League. It was just Superman and Lex, I think. I'm looking at the credit. Yeah. The Flash was in it too, apparently.
But my point.
And Green Lantern. Oh, and Martian Manhunter. Yeah, and Wonder Woman. Oh, okay, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
So I'm not liking this trend of every one of them has to be a Justice League movie. Like, why can we not have these characters stand on their own?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I don't have a problem with that, to be honest.
Because especially this one. I think this one is going to have even more of a Justice League influence, because I don't think, whereas Flash has some traction in terms of having his own CW series and such, I don't think that the producers of this movie trust Aquaman to be able to carry it on his own. Whereas at least with Flash, yes, the other characters were in there, and yes, they had moments, but I felt like they trust the character enough to be more of the focal point. Whereas here,
I mean, the DCU AOM line does that too. They had Just League versus Teen Titans was really a Teen Titans movie, but they had the Just League in it. Just League Dark was about the Just League Dark, right. And they also had the Just League proper.
Well, had Batman in it to sell it. But what I'm saying is,
the rest of the Just League in it too.
Yeah, but they had relatively minor roles. What I'm saying is, I have a feeling, just based on this trailer, that the other Justice Leaguers are going to take over the movie. And that's going to end up...
Well, I think it's going to be like Throne of Atlantis, the animated movie.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it was still like a quasi-Aquaman origin. There was more than enough Aquaman there to justify it as an Aquaman... You know, it was called Justice League Throne of Atlantis, right?
Yeah.
Right? Where this one is called, it says DC Superheroes, but I look at that as a brand, Lego DC Superheroes. But the title is Aquaman. What? So to me, I won't know until we watch the movie. But just based off the trailer, I have a sneaking suspicion, and I'm not liking that trend, where Aquaman is going to play third fiddle or whatever fiddle. By the end of the whole shebang, where it's.
I think he's still going to be the titular character. I just think we're going to see. I mean, we're going to talk about another trailer in a second. That's a Superman movie, but that the rest of the Justice League's in.
But they are also in the rest of that story. In the comics, they play a role in that story in the comics. Whereas if this is going off the beaten path and doing its own thing, then why necessarily? I just get a sense from that trailer that the Justice League is going to dominate that movie. Whereas with the other trailer we're going to talk about, I don't think that the Leaguers are going to be as dominant until probably the final battle, which is a necessity because if you read the comic, that's what happened in the comic where we'll get there when we get there. But
well, it wasn't these Justice Leaguers in the comics, though.
Well, but that's because they're using the New 52 timeline. But still, the core element is there. So this one, I like the look of the animation. I like that it's set in Atlantis, but I just, to me, this trailer didn't win me over as much as the Flash trailer won me over. I'm actually very lukewarm on this, and it's not something I'm personally looking forward to. I'd rather just, like, if it was up to me and I was an executive at Warner Brothers, skip over this and just worry about the live action Aquaman movie. It would be my preference.
Well, it's not the same people that are worried about this that are worried about that, because this is
in. Well, I'm just saying, if I was a larger head honcho at Warner Brothers trying to focus on building an Aquaman brand, this is not something I would want out in the public before an Aquaman movie.
It's the same defense you made with Reverse Flash, the way he was portrayed. It's like it's for kids, so they make him portrayed differently.
I get it, but a kid can look at Aquaman and say, wow, that's kick-ass, right? That's cool.
Well, what about Reverse Flash,
Joe? But Reverse Flash is the villain. Kids are used to mustache-twirling villains in cartoons. It's just, it is. But to me, if like when a kid watches a Spider-Man cartoon, they're like, oh, that's cool. When a kid watches let's say that Batman for references that you like.
Oh, yes, I do like that reference.
Batman is cool, right?
Yeah, so he's awesome.
The titular character.
Rita Romano is one of the most underrated Batman voices. He's amazing. Batman's first entrance scene in the animated series, The Batman, in the episode of The Bat and the Belfry, when he comes after Rupert Thorne and confronts him on the rooftop and has his "I'm the Batman" line. Right. So my goodness, that's one of the best Batman entrances ever. It was
okay,
so
the
good.
Point of me bringing up is not to go into a rant about the Batman and how good it was, because I agree with you. But my point is the titular character in all these animated ventures is often portrayed for the kids to say, "Wow, that's cool. I want to buy his toys. I want to be like him." Right? That's largely the goal, correct?
I mean,
with this Aquaman, I have feelings kids are going to laugh at him. And not in a good way of, "Oh, the content's funny." The character, they're going to look at this and say the character's dumb.
And I'm telling you, in my opinion, in the Lego Batman movie, you were dealing with the same thing with Batman in that movie.
No. It's but you're not understanding the different positions the two characters are in, where Batman can sustain different portrayals. Aquaman is not as, what's the word I'm looking for? Cemented in pop culture as being a strong, cool, badass character. He's typically known as, if you ask people in the general pop culture and kids, he's known as a joke of the Justice League. I don't think reinforcing that.
He's not as famous a character as Batman. No, but when you look at stuff, there's been a lot of serious Aquaman portrayals that are awesome, like the Justice League, the DCAU version of Aquaman, first in Superman the Animated Series, and then in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Look at that. Look at Young Justice.
Okay,
look,
so then why not? Here's
look at
an idea then.
Jeff Johns.
We read Jeff Johns' run, right? Does an 8-year-old, does a 10-year-old know? Does a modern...
Well, they might have watched Justice League or Young Justice.
I hope so, because if this is their first view of Aquaman heading into the movie, that's not a good place you want to be.
But what if the Lego Batman movie was their first look at Batman?
But Batman has other interpretations as they get older. You could say, look,
well, Aquaman does too. That's what I just brought up.
Aside from, you're not going to give a kid, an 8 to 10-year-old, Jeff Johns' graphic novel. What you're gonna show
I just
them,
brought up the DCAU version or the Young Justice version.
You'd hope they should. But if you look at Aquaman's history, more often than not, he's portrayed as a joke.
Adam.
I don't like what I saw of Aquaman in this trailer. Simple as that.
But that's fine. I just don't understand how you're telling me that the way Lego Batman is portrayed in the Lego Batman movie is fine, but then over here with Aquaman, it's
because you're not understanding the fact that Batman is a more malleable character than Aquaman. He's been through the 60s. He's been through, and he's survived that and thrived in other forms.
And Aquaman survived Super Friends too.
But really, has he? Because outside of the cameos that he had in Justice League Animated Series.
No, it wasn't cameos. It wasn't cameos.
He was mostly a cameo in the first run.
No. He had a full, in Superman the Animated Series, he had a full episode, maybe even two of them.
Wow,
then
an
Justice
episode.
League,
wow.
A full episode. Then no, that's a very big difference between that and a cameo, Adam. A cameo is when somebody passes by and maybe has one line.
By comparison, he doesn't have the malleability. Like, if you go and take a poll on the street of general people, ask them about Aquaman, they think he's a joke. That's what I'm telling you. They think he's a joke. They don't know that Jeff Johns run.
And those people are probably not going to watch this movie.
You think a lot of parents I know watch movies with their kids, watch cartoons with their kids. So if they're seeing this, but again, I just don't think from a wider perspective of the mass audience, this is the kind of thing to be portraying right before his first ever live action film.
This is certainly not my favorite portrayal of Aquaman either. I'm just very frustrated by the fact.
I never said Lego Batman was my ultimate preferred portrayal of Batman.
I just don't get how that doesn't bother you at all, and then all of a sudden Aquaman has a joke made about him, and it's the end of the world.
Again, you're not getting the fact that Batman's had a history of how he's more, Batman is more well known for the Dark Knight trilogy than he is for Lego Batman. That's just a fact.
Yeah, that's true.
So the person, he's the larger perception of Batman in out there in the world is this dark, brooding vigilante out for justice, right? Correct?
Yes.
More so than the joking, rolling around on the floor, no version, correct?
I mean, the 60s, Batman 66 still has a pretty big presence in people's minds.
Yes, but still, the grander perception of Batman is this dark, brooding character, correct?
Yes.
The grander perception of Aquaman is that he's a joke. The Big Bang Theory, and we're spending way too much time on this trailer, the Big Bang Theory, which is a Warner Brothers product, laughs at Aquaman all the time. I don't like it there. Especially when Warner Brothers, as a company, is trying to position Aquaman as a brand that is going to be popular and make money for it.
I get that, Adam. I'm saying I get that. I just don't understand.
But here's the thing. You cannot like Lego Batman. I don't care if you don't like it. That's your prerogative. I'm not fighting you on the fact that you don't like it. You can, at the end of the day, you cannot like it. I could care less. That's your opinion. You're fighting me because I like the Lego Batman movie with Will Arnett, and you didn't. At the end of the day, I don't care. I'm just telling you.
I'm fighting you because I feel that it's hypocritical for you to say that that's fine, but then all of a sudden this.
But you're not getting my point about Batman, and I'm not going to sit here and bang my head against the wall with you because we're not going to change perspectives. The point is, I didn't like the way Aquaman was portrayed in this trailer, and if it were up to me, this wouldn't be coming out months before the Aquaman live action movie. I don't think it's a smart move. If the Aquaman movie is successful and you start building the brand in a different way, and you get away from this, you know, perception that he's a loser and that he's the butt end of, he's the also ran of the Justice League, then maybe in a few years down the road you can try something like this. But right now, when his popularity is next to zero, this is not the thing to be doing, in my opinion. There's a time and a place for it, and this is not the time and a place for Aquaman to be having it right now.
It's exactly the time and place. It's.
But you're not going to like this movie anyway. You're fighting me on it. You're going to hate it. So I don't know why you're fighting me on it.
I don't think I'm going to hate it.
If it's anything like The Flash movie, you're going to hate it.
I didn't hate The Flash movie.
Can you give your thoughts so we can move on?
I don't want to be here for four hours.
We've got a movie to discuss and an episode. I don't want to be here for 4 hours. The listeners don't want to listen to 4 hours. Say your piece and let's move on.
I wasn't over the moon about this trailer. I thought it was decent. I like that Atrocitus and the Red Lanterns are in it because I've always loved them.
Make a Green Lantern movie. Don't put it in here.
I've always subscribed to the notion that any DC hero can come up against any DC villain at any time. I always liked that idea. That, like, just because somebody's not part of somebody's primary rose gallery.
Well, then my reference is keep calling these Justice League movies and then stop calling them Flash or Aquaman or whatever. If you want to do that.
It's sort of like on Arrow, how they've used Ra's al Ghul and Firefly.
Yeah, but that's because Arrow has useless villains in the comics. Most of his villains are useless in the comics. It's more of a necessity than a need.
Well, I've always liked the idea that a DC hero can, like, they can run. I mean, it makes sense to me that in the universe that one villain might get in the might one hero might run into one DC villain, even if. I mean, that villain's not, it's not like they're saying, it's not like the heroes and the villains say, okay, I'm only going to fight the people that are in my rose gallery. I won't, if I come up against somebody that's not in my rose gallery, then I'm just going to let them do whatever they want to do. Like, I've always, like, it's always felt more realistic to me that they could come up against any other DC villain. So I like that idea that it's Atrocitus and the Lanterns is the main villain. But I also think it's cool that it looks like as secondary villains, maybe, we're going to get Lobo and Ocean Master in this movie, which I think is pretty cool. As I said before, I hated the scene with Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman there, where Batman's like, she's been knocked silly, and then Wonder Woman starts like laughing or whatever, and Superman's like, oh, you're right, I think. What, that was a really stupid scene, in my opinion. I actually thought the joke with Aquaman in the desert, where he thinks he's with the lake or whatever, and he tries to summon them, and she's like, it's a desert or whatever. I thought that was funny. I thought it was cool to see Lois and Jimmy in this movie. A lot of the cameos in this movie, like Batgirl shows up for a second, so it'll be cool to see her in this movie. Scott Menville is reprising his role as Robin in it. He's honestly my favorite Robin voice actor. Of course, I prefer him more as Dick in Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go. But here he's playing Damian, which he's reprising his role from one of the previous Lego DC Superheroes movies. So I'm happy to see him play any Robin. So even though he's not, I think the best, tell me what you think, Adam. I think the best Damian voice actor is Stuart Allen. But
is that the one that's doing them in the new 52 inspired movies?
Yes.
Then I agree with you.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's the exact voice that I hear when I hear when I read Damian in the comics.
He wasn't the one that was doing them in Ninja, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Because that was ridiculously stupid. But yeah.
I liked him in Ninja. Well, here's the thing. The version in Ninja, and I talked about this briefly on our Ninja review, it's very much inspired by the Batman Unlimited version, voiced by Lucien Dodge in Batman Unlimited Mechs vs. Mutants, where it's a more toned-down version of Damian. So I think there is precedent for it. I don't like it as much as the more traditional
version. I like Damian as a little bit of a prick, which is...
Yeah, you know, I agree, but I think that I still like, it's definitely not my preferred version of Damian, but I still liked what they did with them in Ninja.
Yeah.
But so anyway, there one thing I wanted to point out in this trailer, I don't know if you noticed this, Adam, Batman's getting a suit change in this at some point.
Yeah,
in this
he's movie. Got like the black and gray, and that's yeah.
Yeah, because in one of the previous movies, he started out with a yellow oval suit. Then all the Justice Leaguers got their new 52 costumes.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're mostly wearing. And then all of a sudden, Batman switches it up, and he's got the yellow oval again in this movie, which I wonder if could be a nod of the comics, because obviously we know in the comics he's getting the yellow oval back soon.
Yeah.
So I thought that might be a nod to that in this trailer.
Could be.
So anyway, I guess that's pretty much my thoughts on this trailer. One other thing I'll say, Troy Baker, when he got cast in Batman the Telltale series, I was worried because I did not care for his Batman voice in the Lego DC Superheroes movies. And then he killed it in the Telltale series. I just wish that he'd use the same voice here that he uses in the Telltale series, because he doesn't do the same Batman voice here that he does in that. So the way he sounds silly here. And I'm like, I know, the frustrating part is I know now that he can do a great Batman voice and he doesn't do it here. I mean, it doesn't help that they give him lines like Wonder Woman's been knocked silly. That doesn't help it, but if he delivered it better, I feel like it could help a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This one to me seems like the weakest of the Lego trailers for me.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to see another Aquaman animated movie. I think Throne of Atlantis was 2014, I want to say.
Yeah, no, and Throne of Atlantis, whatever this ends up being, I can already say this with utter certainty, will be 1,000 times better than this.
I'm pretty sure, I love Throne of Atlantis, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to agree, but I'm still excited for this. I think that this...
I'm not excited, I'm just watching it for the podcast.
I don't think it's fair to compare a movie before it's come out yet.
Right,
But I think I agree with you that I think I'm probably not going to like this as much as Throne of Atlantis, because I do love Throne of Atlantis. But it is exciting to be getting another Aquaman animated movie. And really, if you count the Lego DC – or actually, like I said, I think that one was just DC Superhero Girls. The Mera-focused one that we're getting also this year, I'm excited to see that corner of the DC Universe explored in animation a lot coming soon.
Sure. I just wish it was in the regular continuity DC animated universe line, because there are a lot of good Aquaman stories that you could tell And
I agree with you. I mean,
again, and it'd be more in line with the perception you're trying to create for Aquaman than this would be. So my final words on this trailer is that this is a movie that I'm purely only watching for the purpose of this podcast. And that's it. Much like DC Superhero Girls. Like, if it wasn't for this podcast, I would not normally seek it out.
You don't like those ones either?
I didn't say I didn't like the movie we're going to talk about. I just said my drive for watching this, for watching it, is solely for podcast purposes.
Well, there you go, listeners. He's doing a favor for you, I guess. But I don't know. I'm not like super excited for this. But I'm looking forward to it for sure, and I'm eager to see it when it comes out this summer. And I'm
all right. Let's move on from this and talk about an actual good trailer that we saw.
Yes. Well, we got also the Death of Superman trailer.
Yeah.
Just released. And yeah, I agree that it's good. This looks awesome. First of all, what do you think of Rainn Wilson as Lex Luthor? Because I'm digging what we're hearing.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was menacing. It was a cockiness to it. There was a it felt very appropriate for Luthor. I mean, there's not really enough to say what his performance will ultimately be, but from the bits that I'm hearing, I like it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm digging what we're hearing from him so far. In that role, and seeing Doomsday just without breaking a sweat just mowing through the Justice League, dude, how awesome was that?
Yeah, that was all. And again, it's very first of all, it looked awesome. I love the animation style. It's in keeping with, you know, Throne of Atlantis, all those New 52 inspired animated movie stories.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yeah, just the recklessness of Doomsday and the lack of effort that he requires to just beat everybody's ass.
I mean, yeah, he's not even struggling there. I mean, he's taking on the whole Justice League. He's not even struggling there.
It's impressive. It's impressive.
And I'll say, I brought up earlier in the podcast that, of course, I think Reno Romano is one of the most underrated voice actors. Of course, we hear Jason O'Mara reprising his role yet again.
Yeah, he's a really good Batman. I will say that, yeah.
He's so good as Batman. I think he's very underrated. So reprising his role again from all of the ones in the new 52-inspired shared universe.
Yeah.
So, that was awesome. And, hey, there's an Aquaman in this movie, too.
Thank God, because he's going to need all the help he can get after that what I just watched.
Well, so there, you're getting your wish in a way.
You know what? My mission is every child that I know that's able to read is going to get a, because Warner Brothers wants to damage their own brand. Screw it. I'm going to fix it for them. Every young child that I know is going to get a copy of the volume one of the Geoff Johns run of Aquaman before the movie comes out. So there. Merry Christmas to you all in advance. I spoiled it. So there.
But no, he's in this movie too, so you are sort of getting your wish that you're going to see Aquaman in this in this line as well.
Yeah.
So I loved. There's some really great lines in this trailer, Adam. The two that stood out to me particularly are when Clark is, I presumably, running into action, and he talks about how he hates bullies.
Yeah.
As he's coming at Doomsday, I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. That's like such a Superman line.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Was kind of like the line when in Justice League when he's like, something about, I'm a big fan of Justice or something like that.
Oh, do not get me started on that line. That was
one of the... If it was scored to Hans Zimmer's score, you would have liked it better.
I would have liked it better, but that's not because of the line. That's because of Hans Zimmer's score. It's still a cheesy line that I'm not a... I think that... line felt out of place.
Yeah, but so is I like bullies, or I don't like bullies. It's kind of on the nose.
This line I love. The truth and justice line, that rubbed me the wrong way. I thought that was too silly.
Well,
but
you needed Batman to come rub your belly and say, could you if I'm better.
Okay, as bad as that. It certainly wasn't as bad as that.
All right, get on with your more lines. Let's go. Keep going.
But the other line that I loved in this was Wonder Woman's line of telling Superman not to hold back or everybody's going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
That gave me chills. Because you know what it reminded me of, Adam? It reminded me of Superman's speech to Darkseid in Justice League Unlimited in the series finale.
Yeah, when he has to hold back because everything's like cardboard.
And everything's like cardboard. And he's like, but I don't have to hold back against you, do I, big guy? And he just starts laying into him. I'm like, dude, as soon as Superman just... I mean, because what this got me hyped for is just seeing Superman just let loose against Doomsday in this movie. Because I remember in Justice League Unlimited, every time I watch that scene, I get so, like, I just get so pumped up watching that scene in Justice League Unlimited. And I'm like, I'm expecting the same thing here. Just Superman just completely letting loose on Doomsday and just an all-out brawl between the two of them. And I'm so excited for that, dude.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. It's going to be, look. I like the idea of this being a first part of a two-parter because one of the things I thought was lacking about the first crack at this.
Superman Doomsday.
Yeah, is that it was incredibly truncated and rushed. And it really, to do that, I think takes away from the magnitude of the story. And it really shortchanges the material. So, you know, the fact that it's echoing from, you know, from the books where he takes out the whole Justice League, just like in the books. And what was cool, and I thought it was even more spine tingling, was the teaser for this trailer, which was just the cape.
Yeah, on the wooden spike. The teaser thing, trailer tomorrow that they released yesterday.
And voiceovers
that was cool.
Of, you know, he's seeming, where's Superman? He seemingly killed the Justice League, whatever. That was cool too. So I'm totally on board with this.
And for me, them splitting into two, that means that with this one, I'm not going to have the complaint about Resurrection. I'm not going to have that complaint until the second part of this movie.
But that complaint is still going to be there.
Yes, yeah. It just means I won't have to complain about it in this part.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. This trailer was awesome, dude. This was awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and here's something I don't think I've revealed on the podcast before. The Death of Superman is one of the books that I got back, that helped me get back into to comic books, in the sense that a friend of mine had given me, like, I knew he had died before, like, I knew that it happened, but I had never actually straight up read it. Until I got back into comics, and a friend of mine lent me the graphic novels, the Death of Superman, World Without Superman, and then The Return, right?
Uh-huh.
And so when I read that, I'm like, oh, this is cool, this is awesome. And so that, along with some of the other ones I mentioned, was a catalyst for me getting back into comics. So I enjoyed the first crack at it, but I was also left disappointed. So I'm really looking forward to this, in the sense that I hope that they can really do the magnitude of this story give it its proper due. And knowing me, even though I know what's going to happen, I will probably wind up teary-eyed watching this movie. Because, again, no matter how many times I know that it's coming, it still has that effect on me. So I'm looking forward to it. I like Jerry O'Connell's doing this.
Do you think you're gonna cry more than I cried during last night's Gotham?
Well, you're like a leaky faucet combined with Niagara Falls. So I don't know about that. But there will probably be some tears. I you know, we'll have to compare notes. once we've seen it, and then you can sort of do a CSI analysis of the Kleenex you've laid waste to over the last 24 hours.
If somebody had been recording while I was watching,
people have a lot of need to get on their, get their ass in gear and start recording you just 24/7.
I'm not gonna spoil that scene for anybody who hasn't seen it yet. But at the beginning of that scene, I started out, I was like trying to hold back from screaming because I was so happy. And then I was crying, of course, but it was tears of joy. And then again, by the end of that scene, it just turned into tears of sadness because I was just freaking out. I was just like, but anyway, I don't want to go back on another tangent about, well, yeah. I would love to go back on another tangent about that, but I can't really spoil it. So
I'm looking forward to hearing Jerry O'Connell again as Superman.
Yeah, he's a good Superman. I like
Jerry O'Connell as an actor from his past work on Sliders.
The Batman?
Well, Sliders, too. You're too young for that show.
but The Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Nightwing in the episode Artifacts when they flash forward to the future.
Right, right.
And he was great in that.
So and
he was Shazam too.
You know what? Funny enough that you mentioned he was Shazam. It was Shazam. But I had always thought if they're ever going to do a live action Shazam movie, that he would be in contention for it.
Yeah, he'd be good. Have you ever seen the movie Kangaroo Jack that he was in?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I like him in that.
But like I said, he's really good in a lot of things. I like him as an actor. And I think it's cool that they're getting his real-life wife, Rebecca Romijn, to play Lois Lane.
We only got like one line from her in this trailer, so I couldn't tell you whether I liked her or not.
But it's her, I like that it's her. Of course, fans of the X-Men franchise will know her as the original Mystique before Jennifer Lawrence came in and has to hog all the spotlight every time she's in an X-Men movie. But yeah.
I guess, so this trailer we're on the same page on then, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. So we disagreed on the first one, but I guess we're on the same page on this one. So that's cool. I'm looking forward to it. So that's another film that'll be coming this summer. So we've got, at least at this point, in terms of ones that have been announced, we've got three DC animated films remaining this year. We've got Lego DC Super Heroes, Aquaman, Ridge of Atlantis. We've got the DC Superhero Girls Mera one. And we've got The Death of Superman.
Yeah.
So three more DC animated movies to look forward to and one DC live action movie to look forward to. So just to give sort of a tally board of what's left in terms of DC cinema this year.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Moving on to, well, I will start with our film news, just to sort of as a nice segue from our film trailers. Which is basically Margot Robbie described her pitch for what the Birds of Prey movie is going to be. And she basically said that she pitched it as, quote, an R-rated girl gang film. So that, to me, that sounds awesome. I mean, obviously we don't know that this is what the film's necessarily going to wind up being at the end of the day. But it sounds like for now, that's an accurate description of at least how she pitched it and how it's being developed. So I'm all for that. I mean, I think that if it does wind up getting that R rating, I mean, I think that's fine. I think Deadpool and Logan have sort of shown that you can be financially successful with an R-rated superhero film. And I think that perhaps this is another instance of the DCU AOM line sort of being used as a testing ground for live action, because ever since The Killing Joke in 2016, they've really done, honestly, most of the films in the DCU AOM line have been R-rated since then. I mean, we had The Killing Joke, then we had Justly Dark, then we had Gotham by Gaslight, and then we had Suicide Squad Hell to Pay, all of which were R-rated. So perhaps that was sort of a testing ground. And of course, Batman v Superman, the Ultimate Edition, was R-rated too. So perhaps that was a testing ground to see if maybe it was viable for them to do a live-action R-rated movie. Not just the Ultimate Edition of BVS, which obviously wasn't theatrically released, but with a theatrically released cut. Perhaps that's the way they're going. In terms of being a girl game film, I mean, we could have expected that from the fact that it's called Birds of Prey. I sort of had two theories about what this, and we sort of talked about this earlier when we talked about Kathy Yan being named as the director. My two theories are either it's going to be similar to Batman and Harley Quinn, the animated film, in which the Birds of Prey are going to have to reluctantly ally themselves with Harley to stop a greater threat, or I think it's going to be Birds of Prey versus Gotham City Sirens, and they're going to sort of tie the sirens in too.
Which is my prevailing thought of what it's actually going to be.
Yeah, I know you think. Go on.
Here's what I'll say.
Yeah.
To me, I have no qualms about the R, the potential R rating. You know, I have qualms the way certain three quarters of the internet reported on it, because three quarters of the internet reported that. Reported a headline that read something along the lines of Margot Robbie says the Birds of Prey movie will be R-rated, when that's not what she said at all. She said that her initial pitch for a Harley spinoff was an R-rated girl gang film, and a lot of sites keyed in on that and chose the sexier title of going with Harley Quinn spinoff film to be R-rated, as opposed to what, and I gotta give a shout out to my to a friend of this podcast, and I guess you'd call him my editor-in-chief, I guess, over at Revenge of the Fans, Mario Francisco Robles, who wrote the title that was the more honest and factual one, that said exactly what it is, which is Margot Robbie pitched an R-rated girl gang film to Warner Brothers. So the idea of the potential of an R-rated film that as of right now is being touted as Birds of Prey doesn't bother me. And the fact that Batgirl is involved doesn't bother me, because the character of Batgirl, you know, obviously with the Killing Joke being an R-rated material, has been in that kind of fare before. But also in Gail Simone's New 52 run, they skirted the lines, but some of the things they did in there could have been considered R-rated. So, to me, in terms of the rating, it's all about what the story dictates the film to be, and if they feel that it needs an R rating, then by all means, do it. Don't just do it for the sake of, well, we can, so let's force it into that box.
Sure, yeah, don't force it, but I mean, right. I agree with you there.
So in that respect. If it ends up being R-rated, I'm not opposed. To me, it's just, okay, what is the reasoning? Is the reasoning story dictated, or is the reasoning just because we can? Two of the things I want to point out from the where the original source came from, which was Collider, in the interview, she makes a point of saying that, yes, she pitched it as an R-rated girl gang film. But since the initial pitch 3 years ago when they were making Suicide Squad, she's been intently focused on working on the script with writer Christina Hodson to make it a script that Warner Brothers was willing to go ahead with. She's saying that they did spend time adjusting it to meet Warner Brothers' specifications. So that, to me, I just want to caution people that this R rating thing isn't a slam dunk, because maybe, look, when it comes to Warner Brothers live action giving an R rating to something with Batgirl in it, even though I'm not opposed to the idea, I'll believe it when I see it, get that R rating, because I could conceivably easily see that one of the adjustments they asked her to make and the writer to make is that it could be PG-13. So,
well, like we both brought up, The Killing Joke was an R-rated movie, and that had Batgirl in it.
Right, but it's also animation. Warner Brothers will draw the line. So my point is, there could be a scenario where one, you know, the adjustments they asked them to make is a PG-13 rating. So it's not – I just want to caution people that despite three-quarters of the title saying that Harley Quinn – or the Harley Quinn spinoff / the Birds of Prey spinoff, or whatever you want to call it, will be R-rated. Don't take that as an absolute fact, because that's not the absolute fact. The absolute fact is her initial pitch 3 years ago was an R-rated girl gang film. She also went on to say that that while she's aware of the other potential spinoffs featuring Harley Quinn, like the Harley Joker thing and all that, she's aware of them, but she isn't directly involved in the creation of them. She was strictly focused on this.
I wanted to talk about that for a second, because basically when I brought up those two ideas that I had for what this film is going to be, the Birds of Prey film, I'm really hoping it's the latter of the two options, which is the one I know you think it's going to be. I really hope you're right about that it is Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I honestly think that Gotham City Sirens with David Ayer is dead.
because, well, this is what I'm trying to say. The basically Birds of Prey versus Sirens. I really hope it's that, of course, because, I mean, as a huge Catwoman fan, that would likely mean we'd finally see Catwoman in the DCU, and I need that ASAP, of course. I'm so excited for her to finally make her first appearance in the DCEU. So that I'm really excited about. I hope that if that's the case, as I brought it before, I hope it's a scenario where Catwoman winds up turning on the Sirens by the end of the movie and siding with the Birds of Prey. That's what I hope winds up happening. That is my ideal scenario, is that Catwoman would be in it and it would be Birds of Prey versus Sirens. What's that?
I think you're going to get your wish.
I hope so. I hope you're right about that. I really do. Because it does concern me. And now even more, I really want that to be the case. Because basically, Margot Robbie's quote, she basically speaks about Warner Brothers developing Gotham City Sirens and the Joker Harley movie in the past tense, as in those are no longer on the table. Perhaps they've just been shelved for later, but there is, the way she talks about it makes it sound like maybe Warner Brothers isn't looking at those anymore. So that really makes me hope that if a Gotham City Sirens film, the David Ayer one, if that's not on the table anymore, it really makes me hope that the Sirens are incorporated into this film so we can see Catwoman ASAP.
Yeah, and I think, I've got no issue with an R rating, because if you want, and I know, and it's a fair assessment, a lot of, you know, fans that I've heard from, some, you know, specifically ones with children, are balking at this idea of having Harley, you know, and Batgirl in an R-rated film, especially because there's media out there with them in PG-13 or PG Fair, like the movie we're going to be reviewing soon, which is DC Superhero Girls. So a lot of them are balking at the idea of the film being rated R because, well, how am I going to explain to my kid that I can't take them to see Harley and background live action? Well, it's simple. There's media geared specifically for them, like those cartoons.
Yeah, like what we're about to talk about, yeah.
And that's specifically for them. And there's media that's not. And it's not the job of Warner Brothers to police what version of the characters that kids are allowed to partake in. That's a parent's responsibility. So I don't think you can fault the studio, especially if it's story dictated. Again, if it's just doing it for the sake of we can, then I take a little bit of issue with that. But if it's story dictated, then so be it.
And I mean, again, I'm going to bring up the animated stuff again. Warner Brothers has already done this with both Batgirl and Harley. I brought up The Killing Joke. Batgirl was in that. Harley was in, Suicide Squad Hell to Pay.
Here's an example. I'll give you an example. My nephews, right?
Yeah.
When they saw the previews for the first Deadpool.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, that looks good. We want to see it. And I said, and their parents rightfully said, well, sorry, you're shit out of luck. You can't see that. were they upset? A little bit, but hey, they got over it.
Yeah, well, and you brought up a great point. Yeah, there's plenty of stuff that WB puts out for kids. We're about to talk about later on has both Harley and Batgirl in it. And it's geared towards kids. So, like, it's not like there's a lack of content for them.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks like, Warner Brothers is clearly really intent on this. So they're gonna be moving fast. And I'd venture to imagine that, you know, she also spoke of the director, the hiring of
Kathy Yan.
Yan, is that how you pronounce it? Yan, Yan.
I'm not sure.
One of the two. But anyway,
If I say it one way, you say it the other, then
we covered both bases, so we're good. We can't insult anybody. She spoke about that and said that it was, what, you know, she championed the idea of getting a female director. But at the end of the day, the responsibility was getting the best director for the job, and she feels that they did that with Kathy Yan. And the other cool thing, and I think that's the best way to go. First of all, I mean, yes, it's great that they did get a woman to handle a film, quote unquote girl gang film. But at the end of the day, I've always said with anything, it's important to get the best filmmaker for the job, first and foremost. So I'm glad they've done that. And the other thing I want to note about the article is that, yes, she does make that R-rated pitch comment. But the predominance of the actual interview where she spoke was speaking about having an all-girl film and the fact that she doesn't believe that Harley can have a solo movie and that Harley has to be surrounded by other characters.
I sort of get that, but here's what I'll say about that. I'm not sure exactly what she means by that, because like she has a solo title in the comics, but like she's got a supporting cast.
Yeah, but I think that's what she means.
I don't think a Harley solo movie would be just her. So like
I think if she's saying that if it is, it would be kind of ridiculous, because what is she doing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so
don't get me wrong. I'd watch 2.5 hours of Margot Robbie walking around the street and crossing the street and going to the bank as Harley Quinn. Like I would. Like she can go shopping. I'd watch that. I watch the shit out of that. But that's because I'm me, and I have a some would say unhealthy love and appreciation for Margot Robbie. But you know, for mainstream audience purposes, I don't think that would be wise. So I understand her comments there.
No, I get it. I mean, I'm just saying I don't think anybody would ever want there to be just a Harley solo movie. Like well,
I wouldn't be surprised if Warner Bros. Batted around the idea at some point.
Well, right. So, I'm saying if it was going to be that, I still think it would be. I mean, it's not like it's just going to be her. I still think she'd have a supporting cast though, like she does in the comics. I think that, like, I mean. Again, it's never just gonna be her. Like, even if it was a title Harley Quinn, and it was a movie specifically focused on her, I'd imagine they'd still take her friends from the comics, or like Red Tool would be there, Poison Ivy would be there, maybe that Beaver thing.
Yeah, so it essentially would be generally what we're getting now. Just you know,
what's that Beaver's name?
Oh, I'm not even sure what the Beaver's name is.
I like that Beaver. Again, now it's making me think, because I think I brought up on our last episode that Mel Gibson movie, The Beaver. Now that I brought that up, I never thought about it before, but this is reminding me of that Mel Gibson movie too, that Harley Quinn's Beaver.
Yeah, it's.
Did you happen to look up that movie or anything?
The movie that you told me about last week?
Yeah.
Not yet. I haven't.
Oh, okay. Again, I'm not sure.
Listen, once all the DC shows are done for the seasons, I'll start venturing out.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying necessarily watch the movie. I don't really recommend the movie, other than the fact that if you want to see a really weird movie.
Well, if I watch it and don't like it, I can always blame you, which is fine for the podcast. So
well, I'm saying it's not a good movie in my opinion. I'm not recommending that it's a good movie. I'm just saying that. It might be interesting to look at the trailer or whatever at the very least, and because it's a very weird movie. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's all I'm saying. We're ready to move on to our next news, though.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, before we move on to the next news away from movies, I do want to stress that because we mentioned Mariel, from Revenge of the Fans. He today, as of this recording, it's today, but. By the time you hear this, it'll be a couple of days. He published his latest El Fanboy podcast, and it's all about DC rumblings that he's heard from his sources. In it, he talks about obviously the. Actually, this is the news we're going to get to. He talks about a lot about Superman and what's going on with Henry Cavill's Superman, and it's a lot of good things. He touches on. Ben Affleck's time as Batman, which I know that a lot of our listeners will want to know what's going on there. And he also touches on a bit about this story, which we're going to talk about now, which I think is where you're going, which is the Flashpoint.
Yes, right? That is where I was going, which is that it's been rumored that, well, basically it's actually very simple. It's been rumored. It's been rumored that the Flash is no longer Flashpoint.
Yeah.
So I'll just go ahead and say, I would have preferred that it be Flashpoint, just because I really wanted to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Batman. But sure. I'm totally fine if they yeah, I'm totally fine with them just doing a regular solo Flash film, at least for the first one. I mean, I'm totally fine with that. I'm eager to see what they do. Obviously, Flashpoint's a very dark story, so, I mean, not to say that John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein couldn't handle that, but maybe this is more up their alley, maybe if they did a regular Flash film that isn't as dark a story as Flashpoint. I mean, perhaps that would be something that they'd be more interested, maybe even just more interested in doing. Yeah. So,
and look, this is something that in his All Fanboy podcast, Mario confirms that this is what he's hearing as well, that Flashpoint is no more, and instead it is now a solo Flashpoint. And look, I love Flashpoint as much as the next fan, as a reader of comics. But I'm okay with this, because I think it's a smart move to give fans some more time with Barry Allen as the Flash in a more solo-centric movie.
Is there time for him to go to brunch in this movie? Because I want to see that.
Well, I'd assume at some point he'd go to brunch.
Well, they better play into that. They better have something
about it. And I think he should be going to brunch with Superman if you.
Oh my goodness, that would be so cool.
And that will play in more if you listen to the Elf and Boy podcast, which you should. Like, if I haven't gotten the point across, DC fans will love this episode of the Elf and Boy podcast. So
we could find out who won that race. And wait, so if it was Superman that won the race, well, actually, I think Flash would probably win. But if it was
Superman... I think Superman would let him win so that he could just have brunch and stay on the team.
Which way... It was only if Superman won were they going to go to brunch, though, right?
No, if Superman won, Flash was off the team.
If Superman won, and then if Flash won...
If Flash won, they'd go to brunch, but he had to pay for it.
Oh, right.
Which
right.
makes Bruce Wayne a little bit of a prig, because you're rich. Why don't you pay for it?
But no, I want to see them go to brunch. I want to see that. It'll be like the scene at the end of Avengers where they're eating shawarma.
Shawarma, yeah. No, but I mean, so the idea of spending more time with this Flash appeals to me.
Dude!
Before throwing him in a big, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Another big ensemble.
I'm sorry, I just thought of something. What if Clark took him to the Talon for brunch?
Oh, stop your delusions. Your Talon is not going to be in the DCU.
No, dude, that would be an amazing nod. Dude.
It would be, but don't get yourself all hyped up for nothing. Just focus.
Well, it could. I'm just saying. You got all right,
can you go cry in the corner about the Gotham thing while I try and get my thought out here? Because you interrupted my thought about
it. Okay, I'm gonna mute you, and I'm going to rewatch that scene from the end of this week's Gotham. And
what I'm trying to say is that
I want to say, for anybody that does know what that scene was in Gotham, the Gotham Twitter page did a 36 second loop of, well, the part of that scene that makes me very, very happy. So if anybody wants to get 36 seconds, well, actually, it just keeps on looping. You can just keep on looping it. If anybody just wants to, it gets addictive. I know I spent way too long watching that loop. But if anybody wants to just get a loop of that, it's on the Gotham Twitter page. So there you go. If you wind up sitting there for 3 days just watching that over and over again, which I almost did.
Oh, that's what that smell is coming over the airwaves. It's you that have been showered in 3 days. That.
Well, it only I said I was in danger of doing that. I didn't actually do that. But if anybody wants to find that, it's on the Gotham Twitter page. Actually, I retweeted it too, so you could probably find it on my Twitter page too.
Right. So my point is, what I was trying to say before Jordan went on this rant again, is that I'm actually intrigued with spending a movie getting to know, you know, Ezra Miller's Barry Allen a little bit more. Instead of throwing him into another ensemble team up for the sole purpose, which was largely the case of ushering out Ben Affleck, that should never be a reason why you make a movie. So, look, I'm all for seeing Flashpoint, maybe as the third Flash film, perhaps. But I'm okay that it's just Flash for right now. And I think actually that's better, like you were saying, better suited to the director's strength, given what I saw from Spider-Man Homecoming. So yeah, there's that.
Oh, dude, I didn't even get a chance to click on the video yet.
Are you still watching that? Can you get back to the, you know, focus?
You told me to go watch that
one. I was joking. I was sarcastic. You have no concept of sarcasm.
Well, you know I was going to take every opportunity to do that.
All right. Well, too bad. Put it on hold for now. So that's my take on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good.
What's next?
Next up, I'm actually going to let you take the lead on this one. Peter Jackson.
Yeah. There's a rumor from it originated on a Twitter page, which is theonering.net, or that's the website. And I assume that's a version of that is the Twitter page. But they are very in the know and connected with Peter Jackson and his team. And they put out the piece of news that Peter Jackson is weighing his options between joining the Amazon TV series, The Lord of the Rings, and assisting with that, or jumping over to the DC Universe and playing in the DC film world. As a fan of both properties, I will say, look, if he ultimately joins the Amazon Lord of the Rings series, I will be happy because I have loved his time on the Lord of the Rings films and the Hobbit trilogy. And I know that if he's working on that, it'll be great. But at the same time, he's done 6 movies based on Middle Earth. I don't know if he can do any better than what he gave us, because I think it's already great. And so I would much prefer at this point to see him join the DC Universe. I hope that's the decision he makes. In terms of what property he could work on if he joined the DC Universe, one of the things you'll hear Mario talk about in his podcast is that one of the projects that he could potentially be circling is not the Superman sequel. With that in mind, I can think of 2 that are sort of out in the ether that he could be good for. Justice League Dark is one of them. Although, with Swamp Thing being announced on the DC Universe streaming service, I don't think we're going to see Justice League Dark. I have a theory, and this is just my theory, that they are going to build up the Justice League Dark set of characters in their own series on the streaming service before then creating a show about the group. Much like Marvel did with, you know,
the Defenders,
Daredevil, Luke Cage. Yeah. Right, exactly. I think that's the way they're going
to do. Do you think that includes? Do you think they're going to do that with Matt Ryan's Constantine? Or
I think they could bring him on. Sure. I mean, why the hell not?
I mean, I'm just curious because he's got his own show right now because he's a series regular coming up on Legends of Tomorrow.
Right, but with Legends, you never know how long that could. I mean, that could be a season.
Yeah, that's season true. That's a good point.
So. But I think there's a way to finagle that where he could show up on the streaming service as well. But I think they're going to build it all that way. I could be wrong. It's just my theory.
That would be cool because it would mean we'd get to see eventually Matt Ryan's Constantine with Swamp Thing, which is cool because they have such a strong history in the comics. So
let's assume that I'm right on my
theory. That'd be cool. Okay?
Just, let's play devil advocate. If I'm correct, then one of the other big ones that's out there that to me seems right up Peter Jackson's alley, especially with the world building that he did with Lord of the Rings, would be Green Lantern Corps.
Mm.
And I think, again, dealing with rings, I think he would be phenomenal for Green Lantern Corps. And one of the cool things... One of the reasons I think he will end up personally joining the DC Universe as opposed to going back to Middle Earth is because Walter Hamada was a production producer involved, heavily involved at New Line when Peter Jackson was in the midst of making his Lord of the Rings films. So there's a pre-existing relationship there. And we've seen how that works where members of the quote-unquote New Line family where Hamada was before, like James Wan and David Sandberg, have come on to do DC projects. I think it's very likely that Peter Jackson will follow suit. So I could see him for Green Lantern. What are your thoughts?
I've only seen one Peter Jackson film, which is The Lovely Bones, which I thought was an excellent film. So that's really the only thing. So I've seen one film of his, which I loved. So based on that film, I'm trying to think, like based on what he did with that film, I'm trying to think of what he could do in the DC universe. And there's nothing that comes to mind immediately, but certainly because I love that film, it certainly makes me excited to see him potentially tackle a DC property. I think I'd like to see him do something. I mean, that movie had sort of supernatural element. Have you seen that movie, Adam?
I've heard about it. I have not
seen
it.
Oh, I highly recommend that movie.
All right. Is that the one with Joshua Jackson?
No.
Okay.
It's with Mark Wahlberg and Saoirse. How do you pronounce that girl's name? Saoirse Ronan? And
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, and Stanley Tucci's in it, and he gives a just terrifying performance in that movie.
All right, I'll
so yeah, check it. That movie out. But yeah, so he directed that, and I love that movie. But I'm trying to think what else, like in terms of what he could do in DC. And obviously, he doesn't have to do something similar to what he's already done. But I'm trying to think of something that he would be good at, maybe based on that. I was thinking something more grounded, to be honest, than Green Lantern Corps. Just like Dark, I could see him doing basically because of the supernatural elements in that movie, but I was thinking also more grounded than Green Lantern Corps. Not that he couldn't do Green Lantern Corps. I see where.
If you ever watch The Lord of the Rings, you'll be screaming for him to sign on to Green Lantern Corps.
I've never seen them all the way. I think I've seen as a kid. I think I saw a little bit of, I guess, the first one, but it never interested me at all. Those movies.
Folks, I can't help him. It's decided. I can't help him. All hope is lost, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. But I understand where you're coming from, though, in terms of the world building, how that could lead him to Green Lantern Corps, maybe, though. So that makes sense to me. But yeah, I'd be.
And you know who was in Lord of the Rings? Who I think would actually make a really good Hal Jordan.
Who's that?
Carl Urban.
Who?
Carl Urban.
Oh, Carl Urban. Oh, yeah. You know, I like that. I like that idea.
Well, of course you do. I thought of it.
I like that idea a lot, actually. And he's worked with several other DC actors before. Did you see the movie that he did with Amber Heard and Odette Annible? I'm trying to remember what it was called. It was phenomenal, though. It was...
Peter Jackson did
a... No, Carl Urban. So he did a movie with Mara and Rain. It was... what was it? And Soon the Darkness. Have you seen that movie? Oh, my goodness. It's about these two women who go basically biking through, I think Argentina, I think. And basically they get... One of them gets kidnapped. And it's really scary. But yeah, that movie's phenomenal. And anyway, so maybe Amber Heard could try and convince him to. And his girlfriend is Katie Sackhoff, who's Amunet Black on The Flash. So maybe she could convince him to come to DC. By the way, if anybody doesn't listen to Michael Rosenbaum's podcast Inside of You, he just did a great interview with Katie Sackhoff on there. So recommend that to anybody.
Cool.
But yeah, that I could see Carl Urban as I could see him as Hal Jordan. Definitely. So yeah, I guess that's that for the Peter Jackson news. Moving on past our film news into some comics news. We have some news that and a picture, actually. So news and a picture. Basically Scott Snyder's Justice League run is gonna involve the Justice League taking on the Legion of Doom. And that Legion of Doom, at least based on this picture, consists of Gorilla Grodd, Cheetah, mm-hmm. Black Manta, the Joker, Lex Luthor, and Sinestro. Now, basically, Meg Downey from Comic Book Resources did an interview with Scott Snyder where he exclusively revealed this to her. By the way, Meg Downey's awesome. She writes for DCComics.com. Also, she does great work over there. So I just thought I'd give her a shout out. She's awesome.
Okay, cool.
But anyway, getting back to this news though, where was I going with this? I got totally.
I have no idea.
The Legion of Doom. Yes, thank you. I have some thoughts about this. First of all, I'm excited to see. I think it's awesome that we're going to see the Justice League versus the Legion of Doom. I wonder if this could be an attempt to create some synergy with live action, given that the Legion of Doom or the Injustice League was teased at the end of Justice League, and there's rumors that they're going to be set up in post-credit scenes in upcoming DC movies. So I wonder if this could be an attempt to create synergy between the comics and live action, which DC often does. I'm excited to see Scott Snyder tackle the Joker again, because he writes the Joker great.
He does.
I mean, that scene in Death of the Family where Joker massacres the GCPD basically is one of the most horrifying Joker scenes like ever. It was amazing. I'm excited to see. This is something that I think Meg pointed out in her article here, that Lex is not in his power armor, which I think is awesome because I've always preferred Lex when he's more of an intellectual threat than a physical threat. So I think that's good. Mm-hmm. The only thing that concerns me is that in this interview, Snyder talked about how he's going to carry over a lot of threads from Dark Knight's Metal into his Justice League run, and how the Dark Multiverse is going to play into it, and Barbados is going to play into it. And I've spoken a lot about how disappointed I was with Metal, and I'm really hoping that his Justice League run. And at first, I was thinking that since he was doing the Leap of Doom, that it was going to be more grounded than what he was doing with Metal, and it probably still will be. But I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that I don't want him carrying over this Metal stuff into this. I want it to be a little more grounded.
Well, to me, it just depends on how much and how the character of what was his name, Barbatos?
I think Snyder actually at one point finally told everybody how he pronounces it, but it's like this Ra's al Ghul thing where everybody pronounces it differently. I think I mostly pronounce it Barbados, I think, but I like to pronounce it.
Isn't that a place?
What's that?
Isn't that a
Barbados?
Place?
I think it might be actually, but
I don't know.
The way I think that it's the coolest way to pronounce it is Barbados, because then it's bat and you get bat in there.
Yeah. Okay. It makes sense.
Barbados. I'm looking it up on Wikipedia right now, whether it's a place or not. Something about demonology here, some weird thing. Barbados with a D is an island in the Caribbean, but it's spelled differently. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, to me, it depends on how he's used. But the point of really focus here is the Legion of Doom, and I like that they're involved, and I also like the lineup that he's using. I really like the lineup that he's using for both Legion of Doom and Justice League. So, color me very, very happy and interested. I can't wait. Because no matter what Scott Snyder does, it's going to be better than whatever the hell Christopher Priest is doing.
I certainly hope so. It would be hard for it not to be. But
one of the most overrated writers in comic books.
But then again, I didn't think Metal was any better than what Christopher Priest was doing, so that's the only thing that concerns me. But I still have faith, though, because I have liked a lot of what Snyder's done. I think The Black Mirror is a masterpiece. I think a lot of his New 52 stuff, The Court of Owls, Death of the Family, was really good. So I'm hoping for the best here. I just haven't been a fan of how he's written the Justice League in the past. I'm a little bit nervous, but overall I'm excited about the Legion of Doom for sure. I mean, I agree with you. This lineup looks pretty awesome.
And the artwork looks fantastic too. So
yeah, it does. It does. Maybe now that I'm thinking about it, this lineup could indicate some synergy with live action too, because obviously we know with the live action in Justice League, we know Lex Luthor's a part of it. We know And there's a good chance if they're doing the post-credit scenes where other villains are getting recruited, Black Manta we know is going to be in Aquaman, so maybe he's going to get recruited in Aquaman. And then Cheetah's going to be in Wonder Woman 2, so maybe she'll get recruited in Wonder Woman 2. So I could see them actually there being even more like synergy in terms of that, too. And I still have a slight theory that the Joker is going to be involved in the Injustice League in the DCEU as well, just because of that guy laughing in the cell who was impersonating Luther. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's synergy. Maybe we should be reading even more. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I am reading too much into it. But
let's worry about the DC films that we have coming before we hypothesize about. Sure. I mean, a lot of things have to go right for.
Sure, sure. I'm getting ahead of myself like a little bit here, from, but yeah. I just thought I'd point it out. So, moving on to our reviews. First up, we've got Batman Animated Series. Next up is the episode POV. How long do you think the description is? One sentence or two sentences, Adam?
Oh, it's definitely a one sentence. Sure.
And no question. Right you are. It's just a very long one sentence, actually. The day after a police sting to catch a drug lord goes disastrously wrong, the events of the night before are reconstructed by the accounts of three police officers, Harvey Bullock, Renee Montoya, and a rookie. Well, they don't name him here, but his name's Officer Wilkes. So I want to call him by name. If they called Bullock by name and Montoya by name, I want Officer Wilkes to get called by name too, because I like Officer Wilkes. Yeah. And the story is by
Equal Opportunity.
What's that?
Equal Opportunity for
Yeah, there you go. Do you like Officer Wilkes?
I don't mind. I like his youthful exuberance.
Yes, yeah, me too. Uh-huh. He's never been on a sting before, you know, Adam. It's his first time. And story by Mitch Bryan with the teleplay by Sean Catherine Derrick and Laren Bright. I think this episode is awesome. And the reason for that mostly is because it's such a unique episode of Batman Animated Series that really focuses in on the GCPD, which I think is really so cool. I mean, it's almost like it could be, I mean, yeah, Batman's in it, but Batman has a pretty small role in this episode, actually. It's almost like Gotham Central, to be honest. And it's really cool to see, you know, the guy from Internal Affairs come in and trying to figure out, you know, because they've got all these conflicting stories, Bullock and Montoya and the rookie. And I think, I mean, Bullock in this, I always talk about how much I love Harvey Bullock and his humor. But the funniest thing to me in this episode is when you see Harvey's telling the story, and basically Harvey tells the story. You're seeing it one way, but the way Harvey's telling it is that he saved Batman, and really Batman saved him.
Yeah, I think to me that's one of the most interesting things about the episode is the fact that, like you said, it was, you know, minimal on Batman content, but it was really a, you know, GCPD focused episode. And, you know, the three different perspectives on Batman were really interesting. You know, Bullock has a negative perspective, you know, playing Batman off as weak, and he had to save him.
Wilkes views him as like, I love the way Wilkes viewed him, because it's like, he views him as like this urban legend, like that can he threw his arm out, and silver spikes came out of his arm, and they made the, and then he shot his arm out, and the door came off of the car or whatever, and he's talking about it like that, and you're seeing it, and it's so cool seeing him have that sort of perspective on Batman. He's like I think he said he'd never seen him before. Is that what he, I think he said he, that was the first time he'd ever seen him, or at least up close, I think is what Officer Wilkes said.
Yeah. No, it was exactly how he described it. And so, you know, the three different perspectives are, so you have, you know, Bullock, like I said, sort of tries to make Batman look weaker and prop himself up. I was the one to save Batman and all that. And then you have Wilkes, as you said, the rookie looks at him as like an urban legend, a superhero kind of description.
Yes.
And then you have Montoya, which is sort of the more accurate, where she's sort of, he describes him that he was on point, you know, Batman was as sort of as vigilant and as capable as ever.
Yeah. which was hilarious when she's talking about, because Bullock had already told his story, and Montoya's like, he must have gotten a second wind, because to me he looked as spry as ever.
Yeah, and I think I think see, this episode could have fall victim to making the GCPD look ineffective because they botched the sting operation essentially.
Uh-huh.
So it could have made them look ineffective and propped up Batman. Instead, what they do is, I think it may, especially the Montoya character, because there are two instances where she figures out the location of where the thieves are, where the criminals are.
Yeah.
And she saves Batman twice.
Yeah.
She assists Batman in the save. So in an opportunity where they could have made the GCPD ineffective, they actually strengthened the GCPD and showed how they can work in tandem with Batman.
This was her. I think this was her. This is her like biggest episode of the show, Montoya.
Easily, for sure.
And I love. Yeah, I love that. And I love like there's some powerful stuff in this episode. Like the scene that always, and it partly is it's the music in the scene. And I want to point out real quick. I think I forgot to mention the director of this episode. I know I mentioned the writers, but directed by Kevin Altieri, who did a bunch of episodes of Batman Animated Series. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Sure. But yeah, there's the scene with the music where I think a lot of the music has a lot to do with it. But the scene where the officers are all giving up their badges, I thought was really powerful. Yeah. And then the scene where they get them back, too, is great. Sort of a heartwarming scene where Bullock has to sort of reluctantly say, thanks, Montoya.
Well, they do one thing. They do make Bullock look like a self-absorbed SOB.
He's hilarious, though.
He is. I'm not saying that as a name. He is what he is. And, but it's painfully obvious in this episode.
But he does. I mean, by the end, you can tell that he does. He does. I mean, he's
sure,
a good guy.
Sure, it's just the way he goes about it. Yeah, it's just the way he goes about
he's
it.
He's just kind of, well, he's Bullock. That's the only way I can describe Harvey Bullock, is he's just Bullock.
And I did like the way they used the music was hitting very much, I think, more so than on a lot of other episodes, really keying in on the Danny Elfman, more so than I usually think of it.
Yeah. There's a couple times when I think towards the end when Batman's the final fight when Batman's fighting and you really hear that music starts. I mean, I always get so pumped when that music comes on.
Yeah. It really kicks into high gear, and it's really noticeable.
Yeah.
So, but overall, yeah, like the content of this episode was great. I think it was serious, and it showed like ramification. Like the thing is, it there's a way that it does it, and it shows both failure and success. And I think that's important to the younger audience because it shows that not everything, aside from the fact that there's this the quote unquote superhero. In town, I think it really stresses home the message that I took away from it is that there are successes and there are failures, and it's in the times that you fail, the important thing is how you handle that failure.
And why do we fall? So we can learn to pick ourselves up.
Yeah.
maybe that's where Nolan got that idea is from this episode.
Could be, but I like that it's there. Like I like it. It's very important that yes, you have a show for kids, but you can also that it still appeals to kids. It has a seriousness and a level of peril for the police who are even less because. Yes, Batman's human, but he has all the gadgets that aid him in his quest, right? Whereas the cops, yeah, sure, they got their gun and occasionally their bulletproof vest, but they're even more vulnerable than Batman. And so there's all these things that, and the fact that they're being blamed and their badges are taken away, that's very adult themed. But you can wrap it in a message that's and a show that's digestible for kids. And I think this episode really, really finds that perfect balance, and I just love the message that I took away from it, which was exactly what I mentioned, that in the failures that you go through, how do you respond, what do you make of those, and
I totally agree. I also want to point out I love that Gordon is very he's very loyal to his officers, and he's like trusting them the whole time. And I love that about Gordon, even though the guy from Internal Affairs, I think, he's not here. He tries to throw Gordon out of the room, but I love that Gordon. And obviously we see in The Dark Knight that sometimes maybe Gordon's loyal to his officers to a fault. But in this instance, he was right about them, and that, you know.
So I thought it was a really great episode.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Are we grading it?
Yeah, I guess so. We've done that before with all of them, so yeah, let's do it.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and give this a solid A+. I loved it.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not beating around the bush.
An A+. Wow. Okay. All right. I mean, I'm not going to give it quite an A+. For me, it's more A-. It's an A or A- range for me, which is still really, really, really good. I don't think it's not in my top tier episodes of Batman Animated Series. It's like the next tier. It's like the second tier.
Well, there are a lot of top tier for me, so it's going to be. You'll be surprised at how many A+s I throw around when we're talking about Batman the Animated Series.
It's like me with Smallville.
yeah, basically.
But I think I'm going to give this, I'll give it an A. Yeah, not quite an A+, but I'm going to go ahead and give it an A. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome episode. All right. Now moving on to our movie review. Which is Lego DC Superhero Girls Super Villain High. And one sentence or two sentences, Adam?
Oh, again, one. There's no doubt in my mind. I've learned my lesson.
No doubt in your mind, really?
Even though you're sort of hinting at something, I'm going to stick with one sentence.
It's actually zero sentences. They don't have a description for it.
Oh, my. They've reached a new level.
Oh my! Just when you thought that they couldn't get any shorter with their description.
Look, I get that this might not be people's cup of tea, but at least put a friggin' description.
Well, you said it before. IMDb is user submitted, so that means nobody submitted one. I guess.
Well, why don't you write one?
I could. Not right now because we're recording, but.
Obviously not. Yeah, but okay. Give
although
our audience
I was,
a brief.
Although we learned earlier that I was willing to go watch Batcat videos while we were recording. So,
How would you summarize this in about two sentences?
Okay, see what I can do here. Oh man, you're putting me on the spot. This is actually kind of difficult. certain students of Superhero High are recruited to a malicious, villainous high school where they must enact heinous crimes for the devious Lena Luthor.
All right.
You like that?
Well, it was better than IMDb. I hear that.
It's accurate, right?
Which isn't. Yeah, well, it is. It is. Okay, look, let me start with a little bit of sort of preamble that I need
to get director and writer. Director, before you say that, director.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, do that.
Director, Elsa Garagarsa, and written by Jeremy Adams, who I believe wrote the previous one as well in this line, the Lego DC Superhero Girls Intergalactic Games, I think he wrote. Was that? While you talk, I'm going to look that up, so.
Okay, so I just want to give some background, and I think people know this already. This is not necessarily my cup of tea. In fact, I am aware of the show's existence because, like I said, a friend of mine has a daughter, and her daughter loves this. So I'm aware of its existence, but it's not something I've watched, and say that I have a good handle on what the heck is going on. Having said that, there are things that I like about this, and there are things that I don't like about this. First of all, I gotta give a shout out because even though this is not necessarily my cup of tea, I found the opening theme song very catchy.
It. I love the joke that they make in this movie about it, with the guys, when one of the workers is like, yeah, my kids always got that song playing and it gets it stuck in my head. Yeah, it's totally so, true. That song always gets stuck in my head whenever I watch DC Superhero Girls.
Yeah, so it's very.
And I want to point out, I looked it up. Jeremy Adams did not, I was wrong. DC Superhero Girls Interactive Games was not one of the Lego ones. That one was written by Shea Fontana. Jeremy Adams did the previous one, which was Lego DC Superhero Girls Brain Drain. He wrote that one, which came out last summer. So he's written the last two, so including this one, yeah.
So I do like the theme song. I will say that's catchy. And I can see that when my niece gets a little bit older, while I was sitting down watching that with her and sort of humming it.
That too. They have a music video for it, Adam.
Or singing it to her as a sort of, you know, entertainment.
You should see the music video.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll show it to her when she comes over. But I enjoyed the theme song.
Cool.
I like the animation. I will say the Lego animation, especially in this, is
pretty. I actually think I like this better than the regular Lego animation.
Yeah, I think it works. I think for whatever reason, it works better here. I think. I can't explain why. It just does. Here's where I take issue. I don't know if I like the fact that heroic characters and villainous characters all go to the same school. And for the most part, hang out, and pile around like it's a Saved by the Bell.
Well, the villainous characters, Adam, in this universe, they're not villainous. And I
take issue with that because, look, I get that it's...
Wait, you were the one who was defending that recently when we were talking about this. You were saying that it was you wouldn't want them to be...
Well, no, hold on. Okay, but now that I've seen it, I can actually change my stance on it.
Oh, okay.
Because now I have exposure to what I'm seeing.
Okay.
And there is a way where you can have... Now, I'm not saying have Harley Quinn murder people or have Catwoman scratch somebody's eyeballs out.
Okay, do not put Catwoman in the same category.
No. But just hear me out. There are ways to make them be slightly more villainous, if you will.
Well,
right?
Here's the thing, Adam. Because I'll give you some background on the... Because I know you haven't watched all the stuff in this franchise, so I'll give you some background. Originally, when this first came out, there was a lot of backlash to the fact that so many characters like Harley, like Ivy, I'm trying to think who else is a villainous character, a superhero. Oh, like the ones we see in this film. Well, Frost, I'm not going to count anymore because in the comics now she's with the Justice League of America. So
yeah, there are certain exceptions that I make.
But I'll say Harley and Ivy, I guess I would say, in terms of villainous characters going to superhero high and being heroes in this universe, there was a lot of backlash. And I actually think I talked about this when the trailer came out for this movie. This movie was a direct response to people who had criticized that, because this movie was a villain where many of those characters wound up doing villainous things in this movie temporarily. So I feel like this movie was a direct response in saying, okay, you want them to be villains? We're not going to do that full time, but we'll give you a movie where they're portrayed as villains. Now, Catwoman in this movie is lumped in with that. That's one of my complaints with this movie, that sort of they lumped Catwoman in with those characters who are quote-unquote villainous in other media but are not villainous here. Obviously, you know where I stand on that I believe firmly that Catwoman is a hero. Obviously, in the just from a standpoint of the out-of-story reason for them having her part of this, like lumping her in with that group, that I take issue with. In terms of what we actually see in this movie, I don't take issue with at all. Personally, I don't have an issue with any of these characters being portrayed as heroes in this universe. I'd probably prefer it that they'd be villains, like Harley and Ivy would be villains. I mean, again, I think what you were alluding to is that they could, I mean, obviously they're not going to be murdering people in this universe, but no, that they could be like, Lena Luthor's portrayed in this movie.
Well, yeah, so, and there's a way you can do it like they did in this film, you know how they were temporarily
villainous.
there's a way you could do that more full time and use that, you know, obviously a neutered down.
Cheetah is the one character, actually, because I forgot to bring up Cheetah, and I'll give you some more background here. Cheetah is the one that I think does what you want them to do with the rest of them. She actually is straight up a villain in this show who's always doing villainous stuff in. And you see that in this movie. She's the one who's like, she wanted to work for, she knew what Lena was doing. Yeah. She knew she was manipulating them, and she wanted to do that.
And you could do that, like, with them full time, but still.
But not Catwoman.
Have it so that, well, you have a, look, how I would portray Catwoman is how she's most often portrayed, whereas she does what's best for herself, and she fluctuates. I don't personally buy your theory. Just because Tom King had it come out of Wonder Woman's mouth, that Catwoman is a full-time
hero. Wonder Woman said it.
Wonder Woman is not a real. Wonder Woman is not a real person.
Well, no character is real. Yeah, so,
but nine times out of ten, whether you want to believe it or not, even though it's right in front of your face, Catwoman is portrayed as a character.
Look at last night's episode of Gotham.
Catwoman is portrayed as a person who does whatever what needs to be done that suits
her. She literally told Bruce on last night's episode of Gotham that she will always be there for him to have it back.
But has she not aligned with the what's her face Barbara Jean?
She aligned with them a few episodes ago. She literally did that, and at first I was annoyed, but then literally she did it because she wanted to keep Bruce's hands dirt clean so that she.
But she
did it to protect Bruce.
Let me my point. She does things that serve what's best for her and sometimes Bruce at the time. So sometimes those are villainous things. You cannot deny that sometimes Catwoman does villainous things. I'm saying she walks the line, and that's
at the end of the day, she's going to do the right thing.
Look at
the Dark Knight Rises. She came back
because it served her in that moment. If it served her to do villainous things,
how did it serve her? She came back to. She could have left the city and escaped without any risk. She could have left as soon as she blew that thing open.
But she got a clean slate with Bruce.
She did the right thing and she came back and she helped him.
Because in that movie, she was falling in love with Bruce. What I'm saying is, and you're not disproving what I'm saying. I'm saying she will do what serves her best and what ultimately benefits her. In that case, in some cases, it's doing good and helping, you know, Birds of Prey, like we see in the comics. In some cases, it's aligning herself with Hush and Poison Ivy and doing villainous things. She walks the line, she skirts the line, and that's fine.
I hope you're not just arguing with me right now. You're arguing with Wonder Woman right now, Adam.
Well, no, I'm arguing with Tom King. That's what I'm arguing with. Let's be honest, because Wonder Woman is Tom King's voice in that instance. So that's how I see the character, as someone who skirts the line. Or to quote, what is that guy? Why am I blanking? What the hell is that singer's name?
I'm having trouble helping you here, Adam.
the singer there, the guy that. The music that was in Logan, what the hell is the singer's name?
I don't know.
Jesus Christ, why can't I think? The song Walk the Line, whatever the hell is the name of the movie, Walk the Line. What the hell is the guy that's in
it? I don't know. What I'll look it up. What's it called?
Walk the Line. It's with Joaquin Phoenix. What is the goddamn
walk
singer's
the
name?
Line. Singer. Shoot, I don't know.
Joaquin Phoenix. Type in Joaquin. What is the
guy? Johnny Cash.
That's it. As Johnny Cash would say, she walks the line. All right? So that's my stance on it. Again, I had no problem with Catwoman's portrayal on this, because she was doing essentially what I'm used to her doing. Is sort of. But in this case,
she was manipulated into doing it.
Yeah. In this case,
I want to talk about that. I love the scene where Catwoman was going to be, like, she's the best at, like, doing the. Picking the locks and all, and then
Of being a thief. Yeah.
What?
Of being a thief, which is a criminal act.
That does not make her a villain. Just because she steals stuff does not make her a villain. Wonder Woman literally says it in Batman number 40.
And you can hang on to that.
She says, "You steal things, yes."
That.
But I think you're a hero.
I don't buy it.
And I'm happy that my friend has found his love in you. She says that.
And Tom King can say that till he's blue in the face, and I still don't agree with it. So to me, you saying that doesn't matter.
Well, anyway, in this movie, I love that she's the best at that, and that she was going to do it. She could pick the lock herself no matter what. And then, but then she gets set up with the what is it called? The master lock? Not the master lock. The skeleton key. And then she gets basically in trouble because they thought that she didn't do it on her own and she used the skeleton key. So I love that. I actually thought it was great how all of the characters got tricked into basically getting kicked out of Superhero High. Like the one they did with Cheetah and Wonder Woman was great. And then once they finally get to the the office, and they look at, and the only one we didn't get an explanation for was Harley. And this is one of the funniest parts of the movie when they're like, "What are you here for, Harley? Wait, it's so weird that we're all here." Oh, but not, it's not weird that Harley's here. That makes total sense.
Yeah. No, but to go, so just to finish my point, I think there's a way, like you were alluding to, I think there's a way to do it where you can have a lot of these characters as mostly villainesses, but not scare the crap out of little girls. And they kind of prove that in this film. And I think it's a shame that by the end of it, they're all friggin' singing Kumbaya by a metaphorical campfire. I think characters like Killer Frost can get away with it because of what we've seen on The Flash.
And in the comics now.
Right. Yeah, in the comics. I think Catwoman can get away with it because she does the skirting the line thing. Walk the line, since now I know it's Johnny Cash.
Or Adam, because she's a hero.
Well, in your mind.
And Wonder Woman's
Tom
mind.
King's deluded, and Tom King.
In Wonder Woman's mind.
Tom King. And I'll give you Wonder Woman saying it if Gal Gadot says it in one of the movies.
What? Okay, how is that?
If Gal Gadot utters that line, then, and if it happens more than just in Tom King's run, I'll give you that. But until then, I don't buy that logic. But who is it? So those two can go between. Who are some of the other?
Well, you had Cheetah, you had Harley, you had Ivy, you had.
Yeah. To me, Ivy should be a villain. More prominently.
I agree.
Obviously, Cheetah.
Yeah.
100%.
And Cheetah's the one who is 100% a villain in this.
Yeah, year. Yeah. And then you said there was one more.
Harley.
Harley should be the villain.
I agree.
And Harley, I will say, was portrayed, given that it's for kids, was portrayed 100% in character. Like I was hook, line, and sinker. Was fantastic.
She's another one always in DC Superhero Girls who she, like I said, like they play on in this movie. She's always getting into trouble. So like she's always
right. And yeah. And the level of craziness, I think, given that they had to tone her down, was a perfect representation of the character.
And she's, again, voiced by your favorite Harley voice actress, Tara Strong.
Yeah.
Who you got to hear to hear a third time in this year as Harley after, well, sort of a fourth, if you count Marlene from Gotham by Gaslight, then a fourth time. But if we're not counting her, then you got to hear her in Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, Batman Ninja, and this. And I don't know if you saw it. Did you happen to see Peter Vera's interview with her at?
Yeah, I'm very jealous of him. And you know, he posted a picture on Twitter with him and Tara Strong
and Grey Griffin, Catwoman, and who played Wonder Woman in this movie. But I most associate her with Catwoman. But yes, but did you notice did you hear in the interview that Tara Strong said she had another Harley project coming down the line soon? And
so I'm excited about that. I don't think
she was referring to this one. This one came out the same day as that interview took place, so I don't think she was referring to this. So I think there's another one coming.
Maybe she's been cast as Harley in the DC streaming service.
It could be, but the other thing I'm thinking of that it could be is the next DC Superhero Girls movie, the Mara one that I was talking about. That's probably the most likely.
Could be, but just a note to Peter Vera that I will be taking that picture and cropping him out and putting myself.
I think you said that. I think you said that last episode too.
Well, I just want to make it known that it's happening, so just everybody be prepared. But so Harley was portrayed perfectly.
And her, she was hilarious in this movie. The line that cracked me up, and I'm sorry, I know it's potty humor, but it cracked me up, was when she starts laughing when I think it's Lena who said bowels. And she's like, we're going to go into the bowels of this building. And and Harley just started cracking up and was like, eh, bowels.
Yeah, yeah. So she was perfect. She was perfect.
That was funny.
She was perfect. I thought that Poison Ivy was generally useless. I got to say, I didn't really care for her character at all. I did like Cheetah, because it was very true, given the fact what I'm saying here, folks, is all like keeping in mind that they have to neuter the characters for the sake of little girls, and boys, little children. I don't want to offend anybody. Given that, I think Cheetah was very true to the character as well. Yeah. Poison Ivy, like I said, was a waste.
They just did a story arc in the shorts where Cheetah stole Wonder Woman's Lasso of Truth.
Yeah. So again, they know how to handle her in the show. In terms of, again, Catwoman was fine. They keyed in on her expert lock picking skills. Yes. So
she was my favorite part of this movie.
That's not really saying anything.
I was so happy because like I was saying, that was what I was most excited about this movie. And that's why this is my favorite of all the DC superheroes movies. And frankly, this is my favorite of all the Lego movies too. And that's including not just the DC superheroes ones, but this is my favorite of all of the Lego DC movies, including the Lego Batman movie and all the direct-to-video ones. And it's because Catwoman was so awesome in this one to see her finally get a starring role in one of these. So.
And I think the other character that. I want to touch on the heroes characters. I don't like the way Supergirl is portrayed.
Are you serious?
I love it. She comes off as sort of, what's her name? Alicia Silverstone in Clueless. It's just, to me, it's too much ditzy, it's too much stereotypical ditzy blonde teen, and I can't
get. I think Supergirl is really funny because what they're playing on is that she's still adjusting to Earth, so that.
Yeah, but it's way too ditzy even for Supergirl. It's too, like I said, it reminded me too much of Clueless, for me to like it at all.
I love this version of Supergirl. Like she, and I brought this up in the trailer too. Like something smells fishy, and then she's got that sandwich. She's got that sandwich behind them, and she's like, she cracked me up.
I do like the bit about the glasses though.
That was
I did like that.
That was cool. Hilarious.
I did like that. I like Batgirl. Batgirl was very accurate to the comics.
Yep.
And they had the whole Oracle aspect about, you know, our computer skills.
And, yeah. Well, she, and this is cool. Probably something you don't know because I know you don't watch all of this. She started out not being Batgirl in Lego DC Super, just DC Supergirls in general. She was like the tech, she was working in the tech department or whatever at Superhero High.
Oh, so they were already kind of doing that Oracle
thing. Yeah, and then later she became Batgirl. So they started her out sort of like what I think Beware the Batman was going to do, having her be sort of Oracle first and then become Batgirl, which is, and they were doing the same thing here where she was working in the tech department and she wasn't really like a full student of Superhero High where she wasn't like a superhero, but then she later became Batgirl. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so I dug that. I dug her portrayal, and I will say, I even like her costume here more than I do the current costume she's wearing in the
comic books. Similar.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, maybe it's the artist that I'm not fond of.
Multiple artists on Batgirl.
Well, in the comics, for me, it doesn't work, but on this show, I like it better.
I do like her hood that she has in DC Supergirls, where she's got like the bat hood sort of with the. She's got like a hood with the. It looks sort of like Damien's hood. And
Wonder Woman, I gotta say, in this iteration, I think would be better off as being played as, like, you know how Dr. Fate was one of the teachers?
Yeah.
I think Wonder Woman would be better off in that role because I can't buy her as a teenager. I can't.
What, have you read the Wonder Woman Warbringer novel where she's like 17?
I
read that. It's really good. That may
be the case, but in this iteration where she's already Wonder Woman, and you know, the way she's is essentially a high schooler, I just don't buy it. I would prefer, in the context of this show, if she was like again, in a Dr. Fate kind of role, where she's a teacher and she, you know, I would prefer, in terms of
the teachers, wasn't it perfect that Oberon was teaching the lockpicking class? That was they always do a great job with the teachers. Like Crazy Quilt teaches the class where they design costumes. He's another. He's a villain who's a hero in this. So
yeah, and again, I don't think Crazy Quilt should teach anything. But
and Lucius Fox teaches weaponomics class.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's so fitting.
But then again,
I love. Speaking of the teachers, though, sort of moving on to the principal, Amanda Waller, the fact that she's taking a vacation and she, like, walks out of there and then gets impersonated and she comes back in, and Grodd, the thing I love about her and Grodd in this is that Grodd is so terrified of Amanda Waller in this, and I think it's hilarious. Like,
well, and just to go back to the heroes for a second, and then I'll give you my thoughts on that. I enjoyed Jessica Cruz here because her being a teenager and sort of unsure of her abilities and how to use her ring kind of falls in line with her anxiety in the mainline comics and how she's unsure of herself in the mainline.
I have very much soured on the character of Jessica Cruz because of certain events in the comics recently, but I will say...
Well, we know, but just as a character...
At least none of that was in this version, so I very much appreciated that there was none of that ridiculousness.
So I like the way they handled her, though I don't know why she'd need driving lessons because she has a Green Lantern.
I love that her car was a construct.
But why does she need a car?
Who was it that was giving the driving lessons?
Oh shit! You know I can't remember. Oh, it was
Red Tornado, I think. Yeah, and then when she goes to save the day and she just leaves him in the car, then he's like, at least she left the seat, and then that disappears too.
I in terms of the teachers, I love Amanda Waller's role as that she's the principal. And I do love how fearful Grodd is her, because it shows how formidable and powerful a woman is.
And in this, in DC Supergirls, Grodd is a reformed supervillain. So he was originally a supervillain, and now he's the principal, or the vice
principal. Okay, knowing that makes it a little easier to swallow that he's the vice principal. Because not knowing that would have been one of my complaints, that I can't see him as a vice principal anyway. But Walter was great.
And I think Yvette Nicole Brown, who voices her in this, she's such a good Waller. Like, I could see her doing Waller in a serious...
I could see her doing something more serious as well. And I really like Lena Luthor. She's more along the lines of what I wanted the other girls to be as those.
Okay.
And
did you love, that she's setting up the Legion of Doom in this?
Yeah, and you know what? Her plot point of sort of coercing... And because even she says some of these students don't belong here, and so she as a character is pointing out what me as an audience member is having an issue with.
I'm very much convinced that they did this movie to address complaints that people have about.
Yeah, I just hate the fact that at the end, again, they were all back to singing Kumbaya. That bothered me, but her plan, the fact that she was going to coerce them and. She sets up like a phony school.
For me, Lena Luthor and DC Supergirls is too mustache twirling for me. But I love the fact that she was setting up the Legion of Doom and that they even used like the classic Legion of Doom headquarters and all. That was so cool.
Yeah, and by the way, did you like the way they used Dr. Fate here?
It was certainly better than
I thought you would.
It was certainly better than it was in Lego DC Super Heroes The Flash. Yeah, I definitely appreciated that.
Didn't they get the voice actor?
It was Kevin Michael Richardson here, I believe, who voiced him in that as well. But they gave him much better stuff to do here than they did in that. Yeah. So Kevin Michael Richardson, formerly, of course, the Joker on The Batman, I should point out.
Yeah,
amazing Joker voice, by the way.
We've pointed that out many times before. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've always got to point out Smallville alum. I've always got to point out the Batman alum.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, no, I like the fact that, like I said, the way he was used, I thought it was, and it was very in keeping with the character.
Going back to the heroes real quick. Yeah. Beast Boy, I love that he set up he was like trying to make money off of having Bumblebee and Katana fight.
but again, that's very in keeping with the way Beast Boy behaves.
Sure. Right? Yeah, no, it was very, of course, this is Greg Sipes reprising his role as Beast Boy from Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go, and he's amazing as Beast Boy.
It's not far off the beaten path of what he does in the comics or how he behaves in the comics.
Yeah.
So I was good with that. But again, you know, Lena, I thought her plan made sense. I could really care less about the little kryptonite
stuff. Oh, they cracked me up. The kryptomites is what they're called. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Those were ridiculous. I could definitely, and I like the fact that Lena was wearing. It had her version of the battle
suit. Yeah.
It was kind of cool. And, you know, one of the things that I liked about this movie that worked was the exploration of the Rock of Eternity and
tying. Yes, with the Shazam mythology tying in.
The Shazam mythology. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I could have done without, you know, the wizard Shazam actually being on the
Okay. No, dude, that was funny. That was funny.
And the far joke, I thought it was
the other thing that cracked me up in there was Sloth just staying there sleeping during the whole fight.
So I really liked the use of that and going to those, you know, magical.
You know what cracked me up about Dr. Fate or not Dr. Fate, Shazam being on the toilet? It reminded me of Iron Man 3 when the Mandarin goes to
Yeah, I try not to think too much about Iron Man 3.
The first two acts of Iron Man 3 are phenomenal, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you.
So that's two-thirds of the movie, Adam. That's phenomenal.
It's the third act where...
To me,
the villain is if you don't have a good villain...
Well, they did have a good villain for two-thirds of that movie. Not to get on an Iron Man 3 tangent, but...
But he wasn't the villain.
Well,
and then
I know.
It went to fire breathing man, which is no worse than belly dancing.
I'm saying two thirds of that movie is phenomenal though. So.
But I'm a big stickler for a good villain. So when you ruin that, it takes a lot away from the movie.
For two thirds of the movie, you had a good villain.
Let's save our Iron Man talk for when we have Scott.
I'm sorry, but you get what I'm saying. That it reminds me of that.
I get what you're saying, but it was so egregious to me what they did to him in the third act that I can't get behind it.
Well, I mean, I agree that the third act they really messed up. But all I'm asking, the reason I got off on this tangent is because I'm asking, you get what I'm saying, where it was similar to that with Shazam being on the toilet.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay.
That one scene was similar, but it doesn't help my liking.
I'm not saying it helps your liking one way or another. I'm saying it was similar, and you see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Yeah. but I liked going to that place in that mythology, so I was glad to see it.
One big surprise for me in this movie was, and I remember seeing this in the trailer or one of the stills that came out for this movie, was there was one character where I couldn't figure out who it was supposed to be, and there's a reason for that, because it's revealed that it's Lashina in disguise, and that's why I couldn't figure out who it was. And so I was like, oh, that makes sense now. So that was one big surprise for me in the movie. Like, I did not see that coming, that she was going to be Lashina. I thought she was a character I didn't recognize.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah.
But I will say, I thought the action scenes, the fight choreography, the fight stuff
Oh
was
yeah,
great.
there was some awesome Catwoman fighting in this movie that I really enjoyed. That was definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah, well, I figured it would
Yeah.
be.
Well, of course.
And the fact
If
that
it
they
has to do
kept
with
the
Catwoman, there's a good chance it's going to be something that I like.
and the fact that they kept the Batgirl and Catwoman animosity intact, even though it was a kid's, that was kind of cool. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that there was. I mean, I don't know because I don't think that there is really. I don't think.
Well, you have blinders on because there is and there was in this movie, so I
Well,
personally liked
I
it.
don't think. I think in this movie it was a result of
But it doesn't make, like I
Catwoman was
said, you can have
manipulated
your,
into being.
but that animosity, even though she's with Batman, still stands in the comics. So I'm not saying that I want to kill her, but there is, and she does help her, as we saw in the Birds of Prey arc. But there is still that animosity and that tension between the two.
Oh,
So.
okay. All right. That's true. That's true. We did see in the Batgirl run when there was that issue recently, even after Bruce had proposed, there was an issue where Batgirl and Catwoman teamed up, and it was sort of a reluctant team up. So I guess right about.
Yeah. So. So.
I am
So.
hoping though, really, that in these Batman Prelude to the Wedding issues, I'm hoping that Batgirl will sort of she'll be supportive of this marriage. I'm hoping that she will wind up being supportive of that.
But so I thought it was cool that they kept that, and they managed to work that in their own way while still crafting a story for children. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I like. There's some stuff that irks me.
Oh,
But
Ted Grant
overall,
is another teacher that's in a perfect position. Him being the gym coach is
yeah, I
perfect.
just didn't like his character's attitude. He felt douchebaggy to me. So I wasn't on board, but I like his place at the school and his position. I agree with you, but I just didn't care for the character, like his attitude or the performance all that much. And the fact that you bring that up, see, Wonder Woman would work perfectly as a professor of historical, of history,
Oh, that's a good point.
at the
That's a good
school,
point.
as opposed to a student. So. But yeah, so there's a lot of things that I enjoyed. There's some things that irk me, but you know what? For what it is, as something geared for a younger audience, I thought it took, given the, I took the story for what it was relatively seriously. Like when both sides were trying to complete their objective, I thought they took things for the most part relatively seriously. Given the tone of the property, so I had a decent time watching this. I'll say that.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. I did too.
Yeah, those are my thoughts.
Cool.
Anything else you wanted to add before we grade this thing?
No, I guess I think I covered I mean I'll probably think of something later and be like, "Damn, I forgot to mention that." But overall I think I got to everything. So, yeah.
All right, let's give it a rating. What do you think about what would you rate
I'm
this
going to
movie?
give it a B. This is, again, it's my favorite Lego DC movie. It's also my favorite DC Superhero Girls movie. I really enjoy, I mean, yes, that has a lot to do that with the fact that Catwoman has a prominent role in that, and I really in it, and I really like the way she's portrayed in it. But I just thought it was I mean, it was really fun, really enjoyable, and ultimately, I mean, it's not going to be one of my favorite DC animated movies, period. I mean, it's still not exactly like the tone of like what would be my ideal DC movie, but like it overall, I think it's a lot of fun, and a really entertaining adventure. So I enjoyed it a lot. So yeah, B.
All right, and I'll go ahead and echo that sentiment and give it a B as well. My judgment of the movie is not clouded by an appearance of Catwoman like Jordan is.
Well, it's not clouded. It's not clouded. That
Or
I mean,
sorry, Influence. Yeah.
Which is, of course, one of my two favorite fictional characters ever is going to, being portrayed and being portrayed well, is going to.
Yeah, mine is purely based on my enjoyment of what I watched. And it's certainly a hell of a lot better than what I last watched for the purposes of this podcast, which was Batman Ninja. In fact, I'd recommend this even to adults over Batman Ninja personally.
I disagree. Batman Ninja I thought was better, but I
yeah, well, you thought it, I didn't. So I would personally recommend this over Batman Ninja any day of the week. And because you can actually, your kids can actually enjoy it without having a headache trying to figure out what the hell's going on at certain points. So I'll give it a B, and good job.
All right.
I look forward to actually watching this with my niece when her attention span allows.
Cool.
And that, before we, that brings our podcast to a close. On this, it was a long one, a lot of ground to cover. But before we leave you, we'd like to mention that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network. So if you want more Batman podcasts in your life, go there and check out the various options for you. And if you want to talk to us further about anything Batman or DC related, you can do that on social media. If you want to talk to Jordan, Jordan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanB. I also want to send some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, it would help us out if you left us a review. We'd really appreciate it.
And if you want to talk to me on social media, you can find me at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. So until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week, a wonderful weekend. And I know it'll be a little bit late. But to all the ladies who are mothers that listen to our show, happy Mother's Day. We hope you had a happy Mother's Day by the time you listen to this. And we want you to know that everything you mothers do is appreciated and respected. And so until
happy
next
time. Happy Martha's Day, so long, Adam.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, let's not open up that can of worms again. But yeah, if your name is Martha... And it happens to be Mother's Day for you.
And I feel like anytime I say anything about that, I have to mention I'm someone who loves that scene, so I'm not making fun of that scene from BVS.
I enjoy that scene too. I'm not making fun of it. but I'm at this point I'm just exhausted in defending it. So it is what it is. Happy Mother's Day, ladies, and until next time. So long.
Bat Cat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye bye.